The Jack B Show, where pit smarts meet street smarts. Now, here's your host, Jack Berusian.
Hey, welcome everybody. Happy Tuesday to you. Let's call this one the 12th of March. My apologies for not being on yesterday. Those of you that loyally listen to me on a weekly basis. And by the way, I do thank you very, very much for that, having me part of your life whenever that is possible. But a bit under the weather there. So again, my apologies. I didn't think I'd be able to talk for a full hour. But today it's a little different. You can't shut me up. Got a good show for you today. I've got Alan Rohrbach, who's going to be on a little later on, who's going to shed some light on what he sees. We'll be talking a little bit about everything. And by the way, for those of you that are fans of Larry Kudlow's show, watch it tonight. Not only does he got a wonderful interview with Paul Ryan, but I'll be on right after that with Michael Farr. We'll be commenting a little bit on what Paul Ryan has been saying, a little bit about the economy, a little bit about the markets. And what about these markets? Well, we saw 7 straight up days until today, and I guess the real question is it a surprise to anybody? Not to anyone that I know that has been listening to me, and we've been chatting about this for a while. Look, I still think that there's more to this, although we are in expiration week. I think this turnaround Tuesday, if you really want to call it that, and the real weakness was in the NASDAQ. If you think about it, if the NASDAQ were up on the day, chances are the entire market would have been up on the day. But we saw new record highs intraday for the Russell. For the mid-cap. This is very healthy, folks. And then, of course, a little bit of profit-taking. And why would we get a little profit-taking? Aha! T+3 settlement. We got expiration on Friday, folks. Keep that in mind. Quadruple expiration. And as I was saying to you before, I was going to monitor that calendar spread, which, by the way, is still running rich. And let me explain that. So those of you that are sitting there going, Berugin, what are you talking about? We'll understand it a little bit. Just like you have a fair value mechanism on the S&P, and you always hear about these buy programs and sell programs coming in, and depending on how much futures are over or under that cash level, or better yet, that fair value level, that will dictate whether we see buy programs or sell programs. So, and what it would mean is if we saw a level which gave the index arbitrageurs an opportunity to sell futures and buy stock, that would be considered a buy program. But more importantly, it's when we would consider the premium to be rich. Now, the fair value mechanism that you would see on a daily basis with the S&P 500 futures to their underlying cash also exists in the calendar spread. Now we're talking about the March to June contract. That is one of the reasons why it is so very important to monitor it going into those quarterly expirations. This expiration in particular finds that calendar spread at least one full S&P point over fair value. When I say one full point, that's about 100 points the way we would say it. All right. Literally, it is that rich over the fair value that these index arbs have. Now, what does that mean for you and I as an investor? Well, number one, it means that the demand for the synthetic long side of the position is greater right now than it normally is. So let's understand that so we really understand this, because I told you I was going to explain these nuances to you. Now, that means that during this rollover period, the demand for long S&Ps going into, so far, into today's action has been greater than those willing to sell out those long positions. Or, and this is even more important, it could mean you have new positions that have been either instigated or on the verge of being instigated. Aha! There lies the secret, folks. If we see this spread stay as rich as it is, as I said to you, you will see a large buy-side expiration on Friday morning. Now, we could see it both Friday morning and Friday afternoon. Remember, there are two distinct expiration periods. One on the open Friday, which gives us an idea of where the S&P 500 futures actually settle, and then one in the afternoon, all right on the closing bell, and that in turn gives us an idea of where options on stocks, single stock futures, so on and so forth. And you get the idea. You know, that's one of the reasons they used to call it a triple window. witching in the back in the old days. Well, the reason it was witching hour was because everything was expiring at the same time, and you saw this incredible volatility. Well, since those days, folks, they've taken a lot of the witching out of witching hour, and basically it's become just a basic expiration. But with it come these nuances. Now, for you and I that are bullish these markets, we want to pay close attention to two things. Number one, do we see any euphoria come in over the course of these next couple of weeks? And why do I ask that? Because I am looking for a near-term euphoric top, which we haven't seen yet. And by the way, it's something that we'll talk about with Alan Rohrbach in a little bit in the next segment. But, you know, if I don't see a euphoric near-term top, I'm still going to think the market's going higher. I haven't seen it exhaust itself yet. The ingredients that seem to be building up for this expiration lead me to believe that we could see one of those blow-off, melt-up tops going into the end of the quarter. It would start with a buy-side expiration, and it would more than likely end into this two-week period going into the end of the quarter. Remember, the end of March being the end of Q1, we haven't seen a quarter like this for a couple of years, and it really leads a lot of portfolio managers scratching their head if they're sitting on these large cash positions. So, having said that to you, it's very important to understand that the nuances of the trade today, and even though we got a Dow that was higher on the day, think of it, I mean, the market wasn't really up. You know, I mean, look, you know, you had 8 straight days of gains in the Dow. That's going to be a wonderful headline tomorrow. You know what I mean? But the reality is this, folks, as you and I well know, that, you know, the breadth of the market today was what we would consider to be a turnaround Tuesday. Now, that's important for us to understand because that is usually, by the way, the MO on weeks where we see strength. You see the markets pull back on turnaround Tuesday and then rally into the end of the week. By the way, do you realize that we have not seen a Friday that's been lower on the day ever since the beginning of the year? And that's interesting to me just right there alone. And having this Friday be that quadruple expiration kind of adds a little bit more fuel to the fire. But either way, all of this volatility going into Friday's action has to be monitored because it's going to give you a key. Now, the other part of that key, as I told you, there are going to be two things that I'm going to be looking for. One of them, is that melt-up, or at least the beginnings of what might be a melt-up going into the end of the quarter. And the other one is going to be how much of a commitment we really see from some of that cash that's sitting on the sidelines. You know, that is one of those questions that people have been asking. People have been looking for the great rotation out of bonds. And you've even heard me say it. Well, you know, folks, I think, and there was one point last year when Alan Rohrbach and I were doing the show, and I think I turned to Alan and I said, you know what, I throw up my hands, I can't sell the bond market anymore, you know, because it wouldn't go down. Because I came to the realization, and I think I've shared this with you before, that when we're at 670 in the S&P, we're at 2% in the 10-year. When we're at 900 in the S&P, we're at 2% in the 10-year. When we're at 1100 in the S&P, we're at 2% in the 10-year. We're at 1550 in the S&P, and guess where we're at in the 10-year? We're at 2% in the 10-year. Well, what does that tell me? It tells me that the bonds have been giving the wrong signal now for how long? Well, you know, as long as I've been trying to fight them. So basically, it's gotten to the point now where a lot of portfolio managers that are in bonds for parking reasons, big difference than capital preservation reasons. You know, remember, as I told you before, there is some money that is never going to come out of the bond market. I'm convinced of that. These are the people that are entering their 70s that have now lived through two big, huge, volatile moves in equities and have vowed, they've prayed, they've taken a stack of Bibles, put their hand on it and said, I will never get into the market with this money again. It is now there for capital preservation. Well, guess what, folks? All right? You and I know that Armageddon is never an investment strategy. It's one of the things, you know, that I've been saying to you all along throughout these last 4 or 5 years. And the only reason why I can see that happen is because people are completely misled by what they see, not only by the bond market, but also by what they seem to think are these new all-time highs, which gets back to my original point. You know, we talk about these all-time highs, and, you know, we keep hearing them, and here's another, you know, 8th straight day of record gains in the Dow. Well, you know, folks, do the work. Think about it this way. You know, on an inflation-adjusted basis, we're still about 10% lower, all right, than when we were at these highs before, all right? Now, having said that to you, you know, you still have an S&P that has not hit its all-time high yet. So I'm still waiting for that to give me some confirmation. And with all of that, folks, remember, comes this whole first quarter phenomenon. You know, the market's up about 10% in the first quarter. There are going to be a lot of people that consider that a good year. All right. Remember what we've gone through over the course of the last couple of, couple of decades, I guess, is the really way to say it. I was going to say last couple of years, but no, you really got to look at the last couple of decades. You know, I mean, and one of the things to keep in mind is that with all of this, you know, we have seen expansion in government. We've seen an expansion in the Fed's balance sheet. We've created an investment environment much different, much more different than it was the last time we made these all-time highs in the Dow. So for you and I as investors, we need to, number one, identify that. And number two, understand that in many cases and in many ways, this is a warning signal, not to the downside, but to the upside. You know, look, I've been saying it all along. Yeah, I love this cheap volatility. I mean, you know, what it does is it gives us the opportunity to buy protection, you know, on the down low, real cheap. No one even knows you're buying it, do they? When you got an 11.5 VIX, all right, you can buy puts all day long and not even worry about it, knowing that even if the market goes up, those values aren't going to go down all that much on your puts that you bought because the premium levels are so low. You know, use that to your advantage. I love the fact that I get to buy puts cheap as the market's going up. That doesn't mean that I expect to make money on those puts, but it does mean that I get to sleep at nights knowing that my stock portfolio is protected in the event that we see a standard deviation move down. Look, do I think the market's going to go down? No, I think the market's going to go up. But who knows what this knucklehead in North Korea might do, all right? Who knows what can happen overnight? Really, look, you know what? I'm not a fortune teller, folks, all right? And I'm not reckless with my money or other people's money. It's one of the reasons why you never do anything without insurance, and you hear me saying that time and time again. So anyway, I do want to mention a couple of things because we missed, of course, yesterday's show. The jobs number on Friday. Look, you've heard me saying it all along, and I guess I'll say it. You know, you couple that with the Small Business Optimism Index that keeps growing, and that came out today. We have got a market, an economy, all right, an employment force that's growing in spite of lack of pro-growth policies coming out of D.C. Don't think that this growth spurt that we're seeing in jobs is because of some special stimulus package that's been passed by our president or Congress. You know, I mean, you know, on the contrary, folks. Look, you know, in fact, if anything, this is probably the first time we've seen a slowdown in spending, all right, because of the sequester. Now, the reality, as I see it, is that you are getting to the point, and if you followed that number, and this is really what I want to get to, the hours worked, folks. The average hourly work week has gone up dramatically. You are getting the American worker working harder than ever before. Well, what does that mean? That's a precursor to even more job creation. Whenever you get those kinds of numbers, they're usually a hint as to what might be coming down the road. Now, with that job creation, and this is the big caveat, comes a Fed that might take their foot off the gas pedal. Remember, they have already told us that they have a target in mind, and it is based on unemployment. So we want to watch those jobs, watch them being created, keep an eye on that number, and pay attention to any of the announcements and speeches given by these Fed governors, because they could start giving us a bit of a hint as to what is going on in their minds. And I'd love to get Alan Rohrbach's feel on that. We'll talk to him again in a little bit. And the last thing before we leave this segment that I want to touch on, and it's something that I'll be talking about when I'm on Larry Kudlow's show later on today, because I'll be following the interview, is Representative Ryan's budget. This is the Republican budget that was shown today. Now, I got three calls today asking me what I thought of the Republican budget. Well, here, I'm going to spend about a minute on this, all right, just so you understand, because I'm going to tell you what I said to the Larry Kudlow people, because I'll be saying it tonight if they ask me. And I said, listen, even though Representative Ryan uses Obama's tax hikes to balance the budget, it is a great start to securing the much-needed dialogue. You know, we need to talk about this. It's as plain and simple as that. And here's really what I like out of this. The mantra of a balanced budget should be memorized by every Republican. This is their message, folks. You know, I've been saying it all along. The Republicans have lost themselves. You know, it's my party. I'll admit it. But it was lost. It lost me for a while. You know, it lost me with where they were with immigration. It lost me, with where they were with a lot of issues. And one of the things that I kept talking about was the budget. And I kept saying, I wish they would talk about the budget more. Well, finally, Paul Ryan came out today. Not only did he say, but he said something that was so important. And I'm going to quote him. He said, "We owe the American public a balanced budget." You know what, folks? I love when one of our elected officials says something as intelligent as that. You know what? He's absolutely right. Not only does he owe it to us, but President Obama owes it to us. Every senator owes it to us. And yes, every representative in that House, along with Paul Ryan, owes it to us. We as an American people have lived without a balanced budget for too long. And the time has finally come for us to get this dialogue going. All right? And at least it's a start. That's where I'll leave that. All right. Let's take a few minutes, come back, and grab Alan Rohrbach and get his opinions in on this. This is the Jack B. Show, folks. Don't go away. I got a lot more coming for you today.
The Jack B. Show will return after a few words from our sponsors.
If you owe the IRS more than $10,000, please write down this phone number. It's time to deal with your IRS problems today. Call Certified Tax now for help in all 50 states. Certified Tax's tax attorneys and experts will contact the IRS on your behalf the same day that you become a client. Isn't it time to face your IRS problems? Call today for your free, no-obligation consultation. 800-570-5115. That's 1-800-570-5115. Again, 800-570-5115.
Hello, listeners. It's Sarah Ritz here. You might know me as Little Miss Market on The Jack B. Show. Don't forget, Capstone Financial School is currently offering a special rate for any consumer education, personal finance, or investing course to our listeners. If you are concerned about your financial future and need help, our 10-hour course will show you how to get the best rates, including credit scores, credit cards, auto loans, student loans, cell phone plans, renting versus buying, and record keeping to investing with low risk, high probability. The school offers a one-on-one consultation. Before entering a class, we will find out what your needs are and how to apply that information to your education experience. Our school admission counselors are available for questions regarding availability, and special rates are being offered. Also, don't forget about our Give a Free Class to a Vet program. For further details, visit our website at www.capstonefinancialschool.com or call 855-411-3232.
When it comes to trading and investing, education is the key to success. But with so many trading schools out there, how do you know which one is right for you? Hi, I'm Greg Hadley, president of Bull & Bear Institute. Bull & Bear Institute was designed by traders for traders. We give you the comprehensive education you need to trade successfully with confidence. Our classes are taught by professional traders with over 100 years of combined experience in the capital markets. Get results. We teach you how to identify price movements and take advantage of it using futures, options, stocks, and ETFs. Develop the knowledge, patience, and discipline it takes to spot the right time to act. Call 855-Y-TRADE or go to bullandbearinstitute.com to sign up for a free subscription to our exclusive newsletter. Flexible day and evening classes are always available. Call 855-Y-TRADE. That's 855-949-8723 or go to bullandbearinstitute.com.
And now back to the Jack B. Show.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. And again, this is the Jack B. Show. So, every now and then, you see a market do something. And this market in particular is one of those markets that if you are bearish, it is probably one. I call it the Chinese water torture if you're a bear. But here to shed us some light on all of this is probably one of our favorite guests, if not the favorite guest on the show. Of course, I'm talking about Alan Rohrbach, our good friend. He, of course, writes one of the best blogs on the street. That's Rohr-blog is where you get it. That's Rohr-blog. And, of course, we're doing a lot with him here on the Jack B. Show. Alan, first of all, welcome. It's always a pleasure to have you on, my friend.
Great being here, Jack. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. And you know what? I'd love for you to comment on what I just said. You know, you and get a bit of an overview on the markets here, and let's start with that, because this market, And I think, you know, when we saw that number come out on Friday and the unemployment number, the way they came out, really shook the Bears to their core. Even those that were the guys that were fighting it. You know, you and I know people that, that are bearish no matter what. That's just their the degree of bearishness.
The perma bears.
The perma bears. And even the perma or uber bears got shaken to the core with that number. But I'd love to hear your take on it.
Well, I count myself actually not in the perma bears, but in the skeptics of the market, as you know. And it was a pretty good number. And it was important it was a good number because, as you know, the participation rate went down again. So that's why the actual unemployment rate dropped.
Did you see the work week go up? I I'd love your comments on that because I said something a little while ago.
Work week even up a tenth, you know, because it's a big base. Yeah. That's for all workers. That is telling people that they're using workers that they have more, so that's all a good sign. Again, the dilemma for the market relates a lot to what you said. The psychological and fundamental background relate very much to what you said about this market doesn't feel like it can go down from here in any significant way. Not even your typical 3-5% correction, because once again, much as we saw it the first of the year and that opening in January 2nd when it jumped up so smartly, getting above what I look at the weekly oscillator, and we don't want to run a technical analysis course on the radio, we know that, but basically there are differentials between the longer-term averages and the current price. And when it jumped above that previous topping area at 1,525-30, last week, Tuesday, it gapped above it. First of all, the gap up was substantial. It left it, so that creates extra support. And it gapped right through a previous high. It said, you know what? The next resistances, again, on those differentials, there are different thresholds. It isn't just how far is it in general. There are specific thresholds. Are up toward at least 1,560 to maybe 1,570-75. That, by the way, up into, just as a point of reference, up in the 1,570-75 area. Now, this is lead contract futures, and you were talking about the expiration and what it means to the pricing.
It also takes 5 points off of the lead contract,
doesn't
it?
It takes 5 points off the lead contract, so it leaves extra potential up. So we're talking about the June contract that's trading, let's say right now, at 1,546 compared to just above 1,550 in the March. We're talking about that contract getting maybe $25 to $30 better before it tops out again. And that fits in with your scenario, Jack, of you need a little bit more euphoria in there. And you need,
that's about case, 2% if you think about it in the S&P. That's right. About right, because if you saw 2% over the course of the next couple of weeks between now and the end of the quarter, chances are that would be probably enough in my mind to warrant a bit of euphoria. And with that, I would think that we'd see that volatility index probably get under 11, maybe even closer to 10. That complacency would be that perfect storm.
It fits in with the rollover of the contract. You know, close on Thursday and the brief resettlement on Friday of this week for the March contract that's going off the board into that Friday expiration.
Let me explain why that's important. I just want to delve for one more minute on that. Because remember, folks, as I was saying to you before, what happens is that you have people that are passive positions that are now taking their large positions with this expiration because it's one of the easiest ways to get in or out of positions that are very large using this expiration. Now, what will happen, and Alan, you know, you might want to follow this, is that they will go out there and clean the street of inventory. In other words, they will go out there and look at the index arbitrageurs and buy their inventory through the EFP markets. They will take them on in many cases, which leaves the index arbitrage community depleted of their bullets, of their ammunition. What that means, folks, is that they're less likely to do anything on the sell side, more likely to do things to the buy side to replenish that inventory that was depleted. It's right. One of the reasons why you have those little nuances. It doesn't mean it's going to happen. There could be somebody out there with $10 billion to sell these next couple of weeks, folks. So do your own homework, but I'm just telling you what I see.
It gets back to a very classical technical tendency, not just for the discounted second month, because it's always discounted in the second month of the S&P future, almost always, but also you see markets like bonds, where you have significant discounts in the second months. Those second months, if they don't break the next lower support after the lead contract expires, and what we mean is the specific expiration, actually the contract closing, not, oh, it's the first of the month, so the trading shifting into another contract. But when you get to an actual expiration.
So we're talking about Friday morning's expiration Friday morning, for the March contract.
So they'll still be trading at a $5 premium, and maybe it's part of the phenomenon you just described. If the second month doesn't break the next low resistance right away, it automatically wants to gain that $5 back and start trading where the previous lead contract was trading.
That's interesting.
Interesting phenomenon.
You know, I do want to ask you about this on a technical basis. You showed us something and talked about something a while back and said, I think it was your 41 or 42-week moving average.
That was the 41. That's the underlying I use for that weekly oscillator.
You know, I found that interesting because Bob Pisani on TV on CNBC today was talking about how whenever the market gets 8% over its 100 or 200-day moving average, it seems to have trouble getting through. And it seemed to be right along the lines of what you were saying. I think they were just looking at a different indicator. I think yours is probably a little more pure than theirs might be. But how is that acting right now? And is that something that you are looking at and paying attention to, you know, normally like you normally do?
That's a great question. And they're using a percentage. I tend to use a straight differential. And the differential I'm looking at for the...
You always said it was about 100 points or 120 points over or something.
Well,
somewhere.
Yeah, no, the full extension, the resistance in the 1,525 to 30 area when it was trading there. Now,
right.
Remember, the 41-week average is rising.
Keeps going up, yes.
It ticks up pretty gradually.
That's right.
But it still is rising. That was the one that, before it got there, Jack and I had the 1,525 to 30. Thank you very much for the Italian insanity correction down to 1483.
I got my 3% in the S&P. I got my 4% in the Russell. And I'm thankful because that's exactly what I said
right,
that was going to happen.
And we had some couple things we did with Bull and Bear Institute on the new service we're doing to recommend cheap out of the money options plays. Where people had a very nice recommendation there, but once they get down to that support level, if they don't keep going, you get out and you get friendly again. And now the move up to the $20 higher, the resistance at 140, you would think, well, it was 1530, isn't that 1550? Well, that was a month ago. The averages come up. That's where we're getting the 1,570 areas.
So that's where 1570. That's where 1570 comes.
It's about 140 points over that 41-week
average. I like it. In fact, that's for me.
And that's what I mentioned before. And that is interestingly enough because it rarely happens the same way twice. What's the thing? Markets don't repeat, but they rhyme.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's exactly where we were. Last March into April, we were at about 140 points over the 41-week average in the S&P when we topped back then. And it fits in with what you said Pisani was mentioning. There's some differential beyond which, on the downside as well, when the market gets 140 points below it, even in these terrible bears, it's like there's a point where the guys who've been making money with the trend are classically, as they say, Jack, pushing on a string.
I like it. All right, let's take a few minutes here, and then when we come back, let's get Alan's take on what's going on overseas. We got a lot going on out in Europe. We got a lot going on out in Asia. And with that, of course, comes a lot of movement in the dollar. And if you notice, that dollar, folks, has been king lately. We'll be right back.
The Jack B. Show will return after a few words from our sponsors.
Are you working harder than ever at your job, but find yourself getting nowhere? Do you hate spending hundreds of dollars every week on daycare, having someone else raise your children? With our free information, you can lead a happier life, work from home, and start earning money as soon as next week.
I was a traditional business owner, and our business was affected greatly by the economy, so we were looking for another income stream. It allowed me to actually walk away from a 16-year career and part owner in a traditional business just after 8 months.
Go to freedom27.com, get out of the rat race, work from home, and start earning great money as soon as next week.
I'm a single mom. Before this business, I was over $90,000 in credit card debt alone. And now we go to Disneyland, Disney World. We've been on vacations to Hawaii. I never could have done that before this business.
Go to freedom27.com right now and change your life today. That's freedom, the number 27.com. Freedom27.com and start earning great money as soon as next week.
Hey folks, Jack Barugin here, host of The Jack B Show. One of the questions that people ask most often is, how do you learn about the markets? Well, the people at the Bull and Bear Institute have probably one of the best course curriculums that I have ever come across to teach people about the capital markets. With over 100 years of combined experience, their staff brings a wealth of information to each and every Bull and Bear Institute course. So whether you're trading futures, options, stocks, ETFs, whether you're thinking about trading them, whether you have your money with a registered investment advisor, I would highly recommend that you go out there and learn exactly what is going on. These are classes that are both live and online, AM and PM. So do yourself a favor, folks. Contact these people and understand what is going on in your financial world. Again, the Bull and Bear Institute, 855-Y-TRADE. That's 855-Y-TRADE, 855-949-8723.
If you owe the IRS more than $10,000, please write down this phone number. It's time to deal with your IRS problems today. Call Certified Tax now for help in all 50 states. Certified Tax's tax attorneys and experts will contact the IRS on your behalf the same day that you become a client. Isn't it time to face your IRS problems? Call today for your free, no-obligation consultation. 800-570-5115. That's 1-800-570-5115. Again, 800-570-5115.
And now back to the Jack B. Show.
Yeah, welcome back, everybody, to the second half of the Jack B. Show. Eight straight up days for the Dow. Eight straight record days. I got a feeling, as I said to you, we're going to be saying that a lot this year. So it's going to be one of those years, folks. Get ready. Put your seatbelts on. Unfortunately, the rest of the market didn't show that kind of strength. I think a lot of it was dragged down by the NASDAQ today. Strength in gold, though. That was up about 15, heading back towards 1,600, just as I was saying. And that's happening with the dollar doing well against the British pound, against the Japanese yen, against the euro currency. And let's talk a little bit about that with Alan Rohrbach, our guest host here. Alan, you know, I've been watching this dollar moving. It's been moving like a son of a gun. With it, of course, has been, you know, a lot of news coming out of Europe, both good and bad. I mean, you know, I see bad news coming out of Italy. I see good news from what I hear down the road coming out of Germany because of the cheaper euro and everyone, some of the optimism there. Give me your take. Is what's going on out there good? Is it bad? Are we still in dysfunction? Should we still have Europe on our radar screen as a possible blow up?
Well, I think you used a figure of speech before, Jack, that explains a lot about what the dollar is doing. When you said the equity bears were being subjected to Chinese water torture, the slow drip drip, well, the people who are bearish the dollar are being subjected to Chinese data torture.
and well, explain that so our listeners get that, because I get what you're saying.
And the reason is that the data is so weak everywhere else, whether our economy and market is artificial or whether we're back, and ultimately all of this quantitative easing is going to turn into spilling over into real capital investment, the sense out there, as opposed to all of the other risk-on phases, which was, Jack, you know, it was, hey, let's borrow dollars cheap. You can borrow currency cheap in a lot of places now. You can grab it in Japan. You can grab it here.
Well, interest rates are zero basically everywhere, except the Aussie dollar, or you know
right,
what I mean,
exactly.
Or Canada.
Exactly. So when you get that, what you get is, if people didn't have confidence in the U.S. right now, or even more so, if they didn't have a bit more confidence, kind of like what does Bill Gross at PIMCO like to say, the cleanest shirt in the hamper.
Right.
Even if we aren't that strong, we're better off so many other places. The money's flowing here, even if it's temporary, to say we're most comfortable in the market in the U.S. because it's going to be least prone to surprises like Italy when the Italian market got hit, or let's say Spanish banks. And I'm not saying I'm predicting a Spanish bank problem right now, but we're Spanish banks. Could develop a problem. So the money's naturally coming here, and yes, it's helping the dollar a lot. And even what you see now in the way of improvement in the other currencies, let's say the Australian dollar, which had a nice push up back above a key level that it had sagged below about 1.02. That's $1.02.5 to the U.S. dollar, okay? It's pushed back up to around low 1.03 area, but it's like, grudging. All the reactions are within downtrends elsewhere. So all the downward corrections in the dollar tend to be met with support because everyone's looking around and going, you know, the Chinese market is not in favor once again. It had a brief, very strong spurt. The European markets are doing okay. But even the ones that are outperforming, the weak pound means the FTSE, the UK primary stock index, has been outperforming us a little bit recently, but it's still well off its all-time highs.
That's the case with a lot of the indices out in Europe, is it not? I mean, they're doing better because of the, I guess, of the strength in the dollar versus, you know, what we're looking at over there. But I guess the real question is this: how much of that, in your mind, is organic, and how much of it is dollar related? It looks like it's all dollar related right now.
It's quite a bit currency related. They look cheap on international basis of people who tend to buy into weaker currencies just because they think the currency is going to equalize at some point. They look attractive. But as importantly, from the export side, it makes, you know, the anticipation that those countries' exports are going to be more attractive. I think a lot of the FTSE rally is based upon, yeah, England's suffering. It's going to need stronger exports to get out of this. It's not stimulating domestically.
But they've never really been an exporting nation these days. I mean, they've been an importing nation.
And that's their problem.
They've been a consumer nation.
Their big trading partner is Europe.
Yeah.
Where they export most to is Europe. So that's the problem. It's like we're going to have to export more. And the pound has been generally losing ground to,
well, seeing it dip under 150, you know what I mean? All I can say is I got to plan my trip to London because I haven't seen it this cheap in a while. It's
lots of souvenirs, Jack.
Hey, let's switch gears to China and Asia. You know, I had somebody on today on CNBC who basically, I guess, you know, has been saying what I've been saying now for a while, and that is that Japan is breaking out. And I really do believe that. The question is, you know, is it going to be at the expense of China? And you know what? That was a question somebody asked me today, and I thought to myself, wow, that's very interesting. Are we seeing it at the expense of China? Are we seeing, or are they two separate economies? Because you know, we tend to think that they're interlocked over there.
That's a funny question because they were interlocked for some time because there was a huge amount of Japanese exports into China.
That's right.
So one of the things that means that the Japanese market doing well, to me, is what you always discuss with people, Jack, is a currency revaluation to some point because you're just saying, hey, the market's worth more in cheaper yen. It's going up because you're depreciating the currency so aggressively, which is finally out above after stalling for about a month and a half from back in early February or a month or so.
Is this Japan's way of sticking it to China?
Well, I think it's more so Japan's way of saying we have to get back to a mercantilist, aggressive management of our currency.
Well, I know they're doing the right thing, and I've been having worked for a Japanese institution for as long as I worked for them. I know that it took probably a huge consensus, and you know what, a lot of willpower to finally come up with this decision. But you know, I tend to think that they're doing this, and one eye is on the Chinese as they do it, because, of course, they do have their issues with certain, I guess, islands up in the north there, you know, and they're talking about that. And
lots of issues.
Lots of issues.
All of the international
waters. A lot of history there, as we well know.
Right.
But
love lost.
But, you know, I guess the real question is, you know, both of them are right now exporters to the rest of the world.
Yeah, and the Chinese export figures were one of the highlights of them doing better, where the domestic economic figures were quite a bit weaker. And that's a really just what they're trying to counter. They're trying to insulate themselves of being beholden to the rest of the world. But I think with the strong dollar, essentially, it's the U.S. consumer underpinning the rest of it again. And that is my concern for the global economy and markets across time, which is, as I've said since the first of the year, Jack, a lot of whether this whole, you know, economic and equity market improvements party and pressure on the bond market is going to continue, rests right here. And you know what tomorrow is? We talk about, you know, what's coming up this week. Tomorrow we're going to get old news. We're going to get OECD
Well, I'll hang on to that because
we're going to take a break.
And then when we come back, and that's exactly what I want to talk. That's funny. You're like reading my mind here. Are you looking at
that's
my
it,
notes?
Jack.
What's the matter with you?
All you right, know we all learn to read upside down on the trading floor.
We're going to take a few minutes here. Then when we come back, let's pick Alan's brain a little bit about what's coming out tomorrow. Remember, he always talks about these numbers out in Europe that none of us here either get reported on or, you know, we don't pay attention to it. Lucky for us, Alan Rohrbach does. We'll be right back.
The Jack B. Show will return after a few words from our sponsors.
Attention business owners and individuals who owe the IRS. Do you owe $10,000 or more in back taxes? You need aggressive representation. Call Certified Tax now and speak to one of our tax attorneys, enrolled agents, or tax professionals who specialize in tax liens, back taxes, tax debt, wage garnishment, and collections. We won't waste your time. Instead, we'll be on the phone with the IRS within 30 minutes of you becoming a client. And you can become a client right now. We've settled millions of dollars in tax issues for a fraction of the cost. Find the peace of mind knowing the IRS will not be knocking at your door. Protect your home, business, and family today. We know the tax laws, and we act fast. Call today for your free, no-obligation consultation. 1-800-560-3420. Remember, we'll be on the phone with the IRS within 30 minutes of you becoming a client. That's guaranteed. Call Certified Tax at 800-560-3420. That's 800-560-3420. Again, 800-560-3420.
Hello, listeners. It's Sarah Ritz here. You might know me as Little Miss Market on The Jack B. Show. Don't forget, Capstone Financial School is currently offering a special rate for any consumer education, personal finance, or investing course to our listeners. If you are concerned about your financial future and need help, our 10-hour course will show you how to get the best rates, including credit scores, credit cards, auto loans, student loans, cell phone plans, renting versus buying, and record keeping to investing with low risk, high probability. The school offers a one-on-one consultation. Before entering a class, we will find out what your needs are and how to apply that information to your education experience. Our school admission counselors are available for questions regarding availability, and special rates are being offered. Also, don't forget about our Give a Free Class to a Vet program. For further details, visit our website at www.capstonefinancialschool.com or call 855-411-3232.
Are you working harder than ever at your job, but find yourself getting nowhere? Do you hate spending hundreds of dollars every week on daycare, having someone else raise your children? With our free information, you can lead a happier life, work from home, and start earning money as soon as next week.
I was a traditional business owner, and our business was affected greatly by the economy, so we were looking for another income stream. It allowed me to actually walk away from a 16-year career and part owner in a traditional business just after 8 months.
Go to freedom27.com, get out of the rat race, work from home, and start earning great money as soon as next week.
I'm a single mom. Before this business, I was over $90,000 in credit card debt alone. And now we go to Disneyland, Disney World. We've been on vacations to Hawaii. I never could have done that before this business.
Go to freedom27.com right now and change your life today. That's freedom27.com. Freedom27.com. And start earning great money as soon as next week.
Jack Marugin here. Most of you recognize me from the floor of the CME. There are a lot of trading schools out there, but I found one that actually works. The Bull & Bear Institute has the best curriculum to teach you about the capital markets, whether it's the basics of investing, intermediate or advanced trading techniques using stocks, options, ETFs, futures, and Forex. BBI has it all. So call the folks at the Bull & Bear Institute at 855-Y-TRADE. Tell them Jack B sent you and get 50% off that first course. Again, that's 855-Y-TRADE, 855-949-8723.
And now back to the Jack B. Show.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, as we wrap it up here for today on this Tuesday. And again, you know what? If you are so inclined, please, you know, watch Larry Kudlow's show tonight. I'll be on, about 45 minutes into the show. But more importantly, the reason I say it is because you're going to have Paul Ryan on at the bottom of the hour, right around 7:30. And he's going to be talking about the budget proposal that he came out with. And I got to tell you, folks, this is going to be key. It's going to be a very, very important topic. Remember, you know, he's talking about doing away with Obamacare. He's talking about, some serious cuts, all of which in 10 years' time will balance the budget, according to the numbers that he's showing us. So anyway, it's Very, very interesting and something that we all want to pay attention to. But we have a lot coming out these next few days, aside from the fact that we have got this quadruple expiration on Friday, and you keep hearing me talk about it. But Alan, you know, you were just starting to get into it a little bit, and I held you up. You know, there are some things that are coming out in Europe, and I know globally that you pay attention to. Give us a feedback a little bit on what you're looking at and what you're expecting there.
Well, we're going to have both important old news and more important new news tomorrow on Wednesday at 6 o'clock in the morning Chicago time. We've got the OECD, that's the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, quarterly GDP growth report. They do a bit more of a drill down, and that's going to be looking back to the fourth quarter of last year. So, you know, more than a bit of old news.
Is this something that economists are paying very close attention to?
I think people are paying attention, but also because sometimes OECD has a drill down on more statistics. You know, they're always late. Monday they release their composite leading indicators. Now, they're releasing it in March. It's not for February. It's for January.
Okay.
They're known as being very thorough, and they release their data a bit later, but it tends to be very high quality. People are going to be looking for anomalies.
Is this the type of data, Alan, that confirms or reinforces opinion rather than shapes opinion because it's a bit lagging and a bit in hindsight?
Right. That's exactly right in the case of their GDP. But OECD composite leading indicators, even though they are what the state of the indicators were in January when they released it on Monday, that's a six-month forward view. So you're really saying, well, that's like a four-month forward view from right now in early March. So that's what you get there. The leading indicators tend to be very good. And the one thing they've been showing, just as an aside, that the U.S. is probably the strongest of it. But, Jack, with due respect for your opinion, they show Europe as bottoming from a trough. That's why I'm saying a lot still rests with the U.S. I have a feeling if the U.S. tops out and starts rolling over based on all the taxationism things we always talk about.
But we've had all of that, Alan, and yet we've still gone up.
Well,
we've had taxation for the last 5 years, my friend, and you've gone up 128% in the market.
That, my friend, is why the other important piece of news tomorrow is U.S. retail sales.
Yep.
What did we say? We said a month ago, hey, look, supposed to be up 0.4. It was only up 0.2. It was greeted with a big yawn. It didn't really cause much of a flutter. But tomorrow now, they're saying X, autos, and fuel. It's going to be up only 0.1 against 0.2. Our question is not any given month, but the data series across 3 or 4 months early this year. Do we start slipping into minus comparisons on retail sales that show the Affordable Care Act, the across-the-board payroll tax hike, are diminishing that top line
growth? When
do
we start taking the storm out of the equation? You know, Sandy, which played havoc with the markets in December.
I think it's gone.
Is it?
Because
there were a lot of people that were saying it's probably going to be with us for the first quarter of the year with some of our economic releases. I guess, how do you factor that in, I guess, is the question. And if you do, how much does it weigh?
If anything, we know people, even if they're having problems with their homes, have to get around. I think it's been one of the pluses for autos. Is Sandy, and autos generally, you know, is auto sales very funny, Jack, because cash for clunkers. We're going to help people out, get more efficient. Well, you know what's happening. Costs almost as much to buy a used car as a new car these days.
Yeah, that's
one of the perverse unintended consequences. But we also, tomorrow, before we see, probably not tomorrow, but on Thursday, we see Australian employment. Now, one of the things people missed on Friday as they're looking at the U.S. employment number, something else important for an economy that the OECD says is still on the outlook is weakening, the Canadian employment numbers knocked the cover off the ball as well. And I think a lot of the Canadian number, of course, gets back to things like autos. They're a big, you know, resource center for us. So when we're doing well, they tend to do well. And
so this Australian number, do you think it's going to surprise some people like the Canadian number did?
Well,
number
it'll
did?
Surprise if it's not weak because of China weakening off again. The Chinese data being weaker, they're only looking for 10,000 additional jobs, about what they had last time, which is pretty weak. But the most important part is what you see is they net out their part-time and full-time jobs. So last month, even though they gained 10,000 jobs, they lost 10,000 full-time jobs and added 20,000 part-time. This sounds the kind of thing you can see here under Obamacare. People being shunted into part-time positions because the companies don't want to have
you
to
know,
cover them.
You said that last time you were on. You said that there was an actual, you know, within the number, you started reading between the lines and starting to say that, you know, maybe there was a little bit more pressure on job creation or on employment down the road because of Obamacare. Do you still feel that way, number one, especially in light of what we've seen with these job numbers? I guess that's the first question. And number two, you know, I guess, you know, is it something that you think can take a lot off of job creation?
Yes. And yes, I think we're still yet to see it because companies are being cautious and studying it and feeling their way through it. It's not a one-time event. It's the erosion across time between that and the higher payroll taxes, because the biggest problem there, it's not a discrete fiscal event like, well, the debt ceiling, well, the fiscal cliff. As we've noted before for your audience, Jack, they can fix that in 24 hours. They can kick the can down the road. If we find out, let's say in April or May, on the statistics on what actually happened in March and April, that the jobs are, the hiring's not there, it's starting to diminish because more companies are figuring out what to do about Obamacare. Payroll taxes mean there's less retail sales. That's why, as we said, this is why this is such an important data set relative to the actual ability of the consumer to spend. Look, the American consumer, with due respect for all of our countrymen, partly because they're living hand to mouth, if they've got the money, in large measure they spend it. We're not known for a great savings rate. Lower retail sales would be the reflection of that in Obamacare and other areas.
You know what? We got to end it right there, Alan. It's a shame because, you know, there's a lot more we could talk about with that. But, you know, I think that over the course of the next few weeks, we're going to be talking a lot about this very issue. Again, Alan Rohrbeck. Alan, always a pleasure, my friend, to have you on.
Great being here.
Again, you can always reach him. You can find him at Rohr-Blog, one of the best blogs on the street. This is Jack Barugian for Alan Rohrbeck. Have yourselves a marvelous night. We'll be talking to you tomorrow.
Views and opinions expressed in the preceding program are not necessarily those of this radio station or its sponsors and should not be construed as legal, tax, or investment advice. You should always consult the appropriate advisor before making any financial decisions. All rights reserved.